Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Penn's Blog Post Radio with your hosts, Jeff Lohman and Daniel Evans. Good morning or afternoon, should I say. Welcome to Penn's Blog Post Radio. I am your host, Jeff Lohman. I am joined by Daniel Evans. Before we get to everything, let me just say one thing about our intro. It's horrible. Our intro is just horrible. So we're going to fix that. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff going on. We're going to talk about a couple of things in this show. Mainly, we're going to talk about the Penguins. And right before we get started, because I'm going to start with some wave files, the Penguins have recalled Olli Maatta and Kevin Porter from Wilkes-Barre Scranton. It looks like the Penguins sent down Oscar Sundquist again. More or less, this is just a move designed because of Pascal Dupuis being hurt and some other issues, especially with Tom Kuhn-Hackl being out. So Penguins have a big game tonight against Dallas. Dan and I are going to get into all of that. But what I wanted to do first was tell you exactly what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the game tonight. We're going to talk about Dan Bylsma a little bit. And we're just going to get you pumped and ready for tonight's game. Also, check us out on pensvlogpost.com. We have our all-new radio show, Google Hangouts. We have a huge contest of an NHL jersey giveaway. We've got NHL ticket giveaway. And the way that that works is if you subscribe to a year to our webpage, we're going to give you 2 free tickets to an NHL game, give you a $50 gift card to buy some beer or whatever you want at the game. Good seats, $700 value. So go to www.pensvlogpost.com. Now let's get to some wave files really quick, and then we'll get down to business. Basically, what you're going to hear is Phil Kessel and Sidney Crosby discussing the game against Dallas and where the team sort of stands at the moment. The funny thing about this is if you listen to Kessel, he almost sounds like he's not enjoying having a conversation about either a Toronto or just a conversation in general. But Phil Kessel, like Dan said this morning to me, is going to have to get used to this. It's just the way it works. So let's get to these wave files.
Well, I'm excited, obviously. It starts again, right? I'm looking forward to this year, and hopefully it's a good one, right?
Any nerves or anxiety going in?
No nerves. I've been doing it a while now, so I'll just take it as another game and, do the best I can.
How comfortable are you feeling with Sid or Tony, whatever it is?
Yeah, no. I think, I think each game it just builds, right? We played the other 4 games and I don't know how many practices now, but, I think it's still going to take time and, eventually we'll get there.
Guys like McDavid, Eichel, like in their NHL, what do you remember about your debut?
I can't even remember, to tell you the truth. I don't even know. I couldn't tell you where it was even. I remember my first goal vaguely, but that's it. It's been a long time, right?
Does this summer feel any longer, just, the excitement with a new team and wanting to get back at anyone?
I don't know. I think, it's always different when you change teams, but, I'm looking forward to this year. I think we got a great team, we got a great group of guys, and, hopefully we can put it together and have a great year.
We got a lot of speed. Hopefully we can generate some offense with that. I think it's important to get zone time. That's going to be a real key for our team. I think that off the rush with our speed, we should be able to generate a lot. But zone time is, the type of thing that you really have to work hard for to establish. And, that's something that we'll have to really work on throughout the year and make sure that it's a good area for us. So every team wants to do it. It's not easy, but you want to create a lot of time the other team's in.
Can I say maybe a learning curve for you as a freshman to build chemistry with your own line? No one's really played together for an extended period.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a little bit of adjustment. I think that we ran into something similar last year and still had a good start, so I thought we were patient last year, with different line combinations and that kind of thing. So we'll see how it goes, but hopefully we'll have to change a lot and we'll have success here early on.
And so there you have it. So you have Kessel's version of what he thinks the season's going to bring. And you have Crosby's what I tend to call excuse-laden wave file. And the reason why I say that is Sidney Crosby always says the same stuff, and I'm not knocking him in any stretch of the imagination. I'm just saying, you know what, I'd rather hear something different for once. So, getting into this, Dan, what did you think about what Kessel said?
Kessel is going to have to deal with these questions about Toronto everywhere he goes. Okay, when you have a stigma that follows you from team to team and a reputation that kind of follows you, whether it's directly involved, indirectly, et cetera, you're going to have to field questions like that. So I can understand that it's going to get under his skin, you know, new team. Well, you know, what happened at your old team? But he has to push forward and take advantage of this chance that he has in Pittsburgh. And I think he'll end up doing that. Jeffrey?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's going to have a tough time answering questions in general, I think. And that's the one subtle difference between Toronto and Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh is the type of organization and fan base that silently, if not in a weird kind of way, silently keeps it to themselves when they're displeased. But if you go a certain amount of months, then it becomes something totally different. And I think that Pittsburgh in general asks a lot of softball questions. They always have. However, we've seen in the past where the press specifically can get sort of nasty with these things. Now, as far as what Crosby said, I don't expect anything less from him to hear anything different than that narrative, because that's been the narrative from him the last couple seasons. Now, normally we don't take calls. However, if you'd like to call in really quick, it's 323-642-1216. Feel free to call in if you have a question or you want to talk about something. Now, here's what I want to get to. We're playing Dallas tonight. And Dallas this offseason added Patrick Sharp. Now, that is not going to change the ultimate dynamic of this team. But what that does do is enables them to move the puck a little more and have a little more depth. And I think especially when you're playing a team like Dallas, and I think Letang said it and Ben Lovejoy, as much as I wish he would just shut up at this point, I'm already tired of him and it's not even the first regular season game yet. But one of the things that's being said is Dallas is a very much a run-and-gun team. And from my perspective, how you deal with a run-and-gun team is you shut them down at the blue line. Chris Letang yesterday said in an interview that he would rather play a style with Ian Cole where they both step up the blue line instead of dropping back. I love that. I love that thought, and I love that theory. But I know the Penguins' defense, and I know that that's not what's going to happen. And that's a big problem. So from a forward aspect, they're really going to have to compete for a full 60 minutes up front. If they get into a run-and-gun style of game with Dallas, this is not going to bode well for the Penguins, and I only say that because of the defensive situation that the Penguins are in. Now, I'm going to let Dan fly with this for a minute, but I think the best thing for us to do first is to talk about the forwards. The Penguins have depth, but can they can, I think on paper, if you were to take Dallas's roster and the Penguins roster, put them side by side, I think the Penguins are the better team. However, Dallas plays from goal to goal, nonstop. Run and gun, much the same way that Bylsma wanted these guys to play with. And I know that everybody saw a picture of Bylsma, and we're gonna get to that here in a minute. But from my perspective, forward wise, if you're gonna play the run and gun style, the defense has to be good. Let's hear Dan's take.
Okay, Dallas plays the run and gun system that a lot of teams could get worn out. What's going to be important from the Penguins tonight is not only shut things down at the blue line when the Stars have the puck, but also secondary scoring. The Penguins cannot afford to just have, say, the top line scoring or just the third line scoring. No, all lines have to be involved and just set a precedence immediately that this is not going to be what it's been the last couple of years, where one line does the bulk of the work and the rest of the team falls back. So they come out punching, and I mean hitting shots, pelting the goaltender, the opposite goaltender, with plenty of shots, and those go in, and not just from one line. And if the blue line is defended by the defense the way it should be, then they can beat Dallas. But if those things do not happen tonight, along with adjustments not being made if the game gets out of hand, the Penguins will end up with an L and not a W. Jeff, your take.
No, I think you're right. And I think that's a very important part is when we talk about the defense has got to step up to that blue line. It's okay if you get beat if you step up. That's acceptable to me. What's not acceptable is if you don't step up and you'll – maybe I need to break it down because I was a defenseman. So let me break it down. You step up at the blue line, and what you do is you always look to your right or to your left, depending on which side you're playing on defense, and you make sure that your defensive partner is covering the slot area because that's where your forwards are going to come from. So if I'm going to the wall to throw a hip check or to cut off the source, he has to move from that right side or that left side to cover the slot area. And one of the biggest problems that the Penguins have had the last few seasons is a guy will step up, he'll get beat, and the other defenseman is nowhere to be found. So the way that you combat that is that one guy steps up to cut off the lane, the other guy steps into the position, into the slot, and all bases are covered. And, of course, if your center's coming back and your right wing's coming back or your left wing's coming back, that helps out as well. It's called collapsing. And the only time that you will collapse in the NHL, the only time you collapse like that is usually when it's an odd man situation, or it's an overload situation where it's a 3-on-2 or something like that. But what's going to benefit this team is exactly what Chris Letang said. I would rather step up and get beat than back up and give them all that extra room. Because that's what happens to the defenseman. If you step up the blue line and you get beat, your defensive partner has to cover your ass. I hate to say it that way, but that's the way it is. However, if you keep backing up and backing up and backing up, you're giving them an extra 15 feet to work with, and you can't do that. Choke them off, close them off as quick as you can. And that's simply the way that I think that the Penguins are going to be able to beat Dallas, is if they get into a run-and-gun game, they're going to have a problem. They need to just use the special teams is going to be a big common denominator in this game tonight. They cannot take stupid penalties. However, I will say, because some people have mentioned it, that they think that the Penguins' special teams, especially the penalty kill, is lacking. I think that's quite the reverse. I think the Penguins have a great penalty kill team. It's just going to, you know, if you don't take stupid penalties, you don't have to test that theory. So I think my three keys to winning tonight, before we get on to something else, is you got to compete for 60 minutes. You got to be tough in front of your own net. The defense, do not pinch, but play aggressively. I've been waiting for this team for three seasons now to play a nasty style. They're on the road. It's the perfect night to start it. And besides, I'm going to tell you something. If you chop, hack, whack, clip, and punch Sagan or Sharp, every time they come within 10 feet of Marc-Andre Fleury, they're not going to pitch a 10. And that's the way they need to be. Dan, your thoughts?
Play a consistent 60. Not only tonight, but carry it through the whole season. As I've said time and time again, I would rather lose 3-2, 2-1, or 4-3 playing a full 60 as opposed to losing 4-1, 4-2, and playing maybe half the game at best. So that is a major concern. And if they can set the tone tonight, which would really be great, if the Penguins could set the tone and literally send a message that this is not the team of the last 3 years, this is a totally different Penguins team, and you're going to feel it not only overnight, but the next day that you faced the Pittsburgh Penguins, and not just a walkover team, it's going to be one heck of a beautiful sight to send to the league to say, we're not going to be pushovers this year. So I'm looking for that consistent 60, defend the blue line, secondary scoring, and adjustments. If all of that comes to play, it could be a pretty good night.
Yeah, I totally agree. They just need to be on all cylinders. And looking into games, tonight's game, for example, you know, obviously Phil Kessel's making his debut tonight. He's a 5-time 30-goal scorer. He's led the team with 3 goals and 5 points this preseason. He was our best player in the preseason. Looking at Daniel Sprong for a minute, he is virtually the youngest player since 2005 to ever be in the Penguins lineup at 18 years, 6 months, and 21 days. As far as the Plotkinov, Malkin, and Hornquist line, Plotkinov had 1 goal, 2 assists for 3 points. Malkin, 1 goal, 3 assists for 4 points. And Hornqvist literally had 4 assists for 4 points. So those guys are all doing good. The Penguins went 18-6-4 last year against the Western Conference. Pittsburgh's won the last 4 season openers dating back to 2011. Heading into tonight, the Penguins have won 6 of the last 7 road openers. Sidney Crosby has scored goals in the last 2 Penguin season openers. If you look at points per game, obviously Sidney Crosby at 1.09 points per game. Malkin is 1.01. Tyler Seguin is 1.08. And obviously Jamie Benn, 1.06. So 4 of the NHL's top scorers from 2014 and 15 are definitely playing in the league. And if you look statistically, Sidney Crosby points per game is number 1 in the AHL. Malkin is number 7. Obviously Seguin is number 2, and number 3 is Ben. So we got a lot of things to look forward to tonight, but the one thing I did want to get to, and it's a question that we asked over on our Pens Vlog Facebook page. If you're on Facebook, you can go to the group page, type in Pens Vlog post, ask to join the group, we'll let you in. A lot of good discussions and stuff like that. Is Dan Bylsma. And the reason why I'm bringing up Dan Bylsma, and I know everybody's going to say, oh, I thought we were past this. Well, we are. But I just started thinking the other day, okay? And if you want to call in to discuss this specific matter, I would love to hear what anybody out there has to say. 323-642-1216. Again, 323-642-1216. You can talk with Dan and I about this topic. Here's the question that I pose. Is Dan Bylsma a lucky coach, a bad coach, or a middle-of-the-ground coach? And here's my perspective. I don't think Dan Bylsma is a good coach. And here's my perspective. Dan Bylsma inherited a Mchelterian team. Mm-hmm. They all had Crosby, Malkin, Hossa, et cetera, et cetera. We had a stacked team. Dan Bylsma came to this team when it was stacked. Okay, so you can't argue with me that he took a non-contender and made them a contender. Okay, look at Team USA. Abysmal. The players complained about him. He was able to get them in a pre-round bracket tournament to be the best team in a preseason bracket. But the minute they went into the actual tournament, they were horrible. The Penguins, regular season, phenomenal. Playoffs, done. Now, you can't blame that solely on the coach, and I understand that. But now we have a situation where Dan Bylsma is now in Buffalo, and he has got some talented kids there. I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination they're cup contenders or they're going to make the playoffs this season. But for anybody that tries to tell me that Dan Bylsma is a good coach, I say this. If Dan Bylsma ended up coaching the worst team in the league, which effectively I guess he's taken over at this point, but if he went to a team that had zero talent, how well would Dan Bylsma do? I want to know what you think. Call in 323-642-1216. Do you think Dan Bylsma is a great coach? Call us and tell us so. You'll probably get an argument out of me at least. But the other second question to that is if you believe that Dan Bylsma is a good coach, prove it with the exception of regular season wins. Because the country club is gone, baby. This is a new team. Maybe the same atmosphere in certain amount of ways. But if you think Buffalo is all of a sudden going to go to worst to first, you're out of your mind. Out of your mind. Dan, what do you think about Bylsma?
Okay. What I'm going to say is strictly business, not personal. When he was in the AHL with the Baby Pens over at Wilkes-Barre-Scranton, it was stacked with our best people in the minors. That's how everything worked out there. When he was brought up, the Penguins were stacked. But let's look at the postseason record of this team after the 2009 Stanley Cup. Second round. First round, conference finals, second round. Now think about this for a minute. If Yes, there were injuries. Yes, we still had a lot of talent despite those injuries. But eventually, your system has to be readjusted because of the fact that some of the best coaches that maybe have won one championship, maybe two, end up get sent packing, in the case of Dan, because they did something that ownership and or management did not like and refused to change their system around. And I've seen it happen during the 41 years of my life, of one being a hockey fan and being a fan of most competitive sports to that point. When you look at Dallas, you know, the Cowboys run in the mid-90s with the Super Bowls. The only reason how Barry Switzer won that third Super Bowl in 3 years is because he inherited Jimmy Johnson's team. When you look at Switzer after that, the Cowboys sunk. And look what happened with Bielsma after he inherited Therrien's team. They went from winning the cup to gradually going down in the postseason. Look at the Olympic team that he did last year. When Laviolette had the wheel, the team got itself into prime position. But once he was told that Dan's got to start doing his thing, things imploded. What did you hear? Dan's too passive. He's a soft coach. That's not just my words. It's Zach Parise, who was one of the best players on Team USA last year. It's nothing personal against Dan. It's nothing against him personally. It's only that his coaching style does not mesh well after a while. Living proof that it doesn't mesh well? All of a sudden, the season he was fired, barking at Crosby in the middle of the game and Crosby barking back at him. Kind of like, who are you to talk to me like that? That should say enough right there. Players don't respect coaches that come off trying to be your best friend and then try to turn on you and try to instruct you on the ice what you're doing wrong. I mean, we'll never know what was said between those two guys, but at the end of the game, Dan threw up his hands and said, it was my mistake, I shouldn't have said what I said. And in a sense, he was right. He should have said it much earlier instead of waiting until, honestly, the noose was getting too tight. He should have adjusted his game plan long before the noose got to the point where it was too little too late. Because in hindsight, the only reason why Shiro was fired was standing by Bielsma. Jeff?
That's a little all over the place, but that's besides the point. I at this point in the game, I apologize because I'm not trying to rehash why Ray Shiro was fired or Dan Bielsma was fired. And the incident between Crosby and Bielsma on the bench is Dan Bielsma has every right to correct Crosby, every right whenever he needs to. I will agree that it should have been done a lot sooner. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, and I'm going to use a cuss word here, Dan tried, there was a play in the zone and Crosby didn't back check very hard. And Dan looked at him and was like, well, what about that? And Crosby said, fuck off. That's exactly what happened. And it was after that that there were reports coming from the locker room about drama and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So at the end of the day, to me, I don't care. Dan Bielsma was fired for a lot of reasons. Okay. The most important one was he allowed a laxed atmosphere. He's gone. He's in Buffalo. The simple question was, is Dan Bielsma a good coach? Now, if I go back to the first season he took over, I never accepted his Stanley Cup win as a natural win. I always thought that it was a Michelle Therrien team, and it was built that way. And, you know, Dan Bielsma himself even said, I didn't have to change that much. I just tweaked here, changed the line there. But it also, I think, when you have a new coach in the system and a new coach and it breathes life into your team, I think that sort of changes the perspective of the things that are going on inside your team and franchise and et cetera. Now, so Dan Bylsma's in Buffalo. This leads me to my next question. Of the three teams, be it Buffalo, Toronto, or Edmonton, what team do you think, the listener and Dan, is going to be the team that makes the playoffs first? Now, before you tell me Toronto, let me tell you why they aren't. Because everyone's going to say Toronto. Mike Babcock is one of the best coaches in the NHL. However, I will add that he has nobody worth – let me rephrase. His talent pool in Toronto is bad. And granted, I think they're going to struggle this season, but I don't see them adding enough chips. I mean, come on. When Shanahan goes out and finds Winnick and gets Spalling, they're not looking to improve that quickly. They're looking to just fill in the gaps, and those gaps are more like potholes, to be honest with you. So of the three teams, and I'll let Dan go first, of the three teams between Edmonton, Toronto, and Buffalo, which one of the three teams do you think, of the three teams, who makes the playoffs the quickest?
Edmonton. It goes back of what I said on the website this morning, but Edmonton. Yeah, I said Buffalo this morning on the website, but after giving it due thought, Edmonton has the best chance of the three. They've really built something. They're continuing to build. And somehow I just think with everything that's being built in Edmonton right now, you could see them in the postseason, maybe not this year, but maybe next year as a wild card. I think Buffalo, maybe another 2 or 3 years before that happens, and about another 3 or 4 for Toronto because they have a lot of work to do. Jeff?
I don't know. I look up and down these rosters, and I always get a little concerned, especially when it's an off season and they go ahead and they draft a bunch of players, and a couple of them, obviously, McDavid's going to play. But I think if you look team for team of who's added, who'd you add, who'd you subtract, I think truly Edmonton is going to be a team, if you just look from top to bottom. I mean, they've got three lines that are really young and really incredible. I think especially Taylor Hall is going to have to find a way to score. Eberle is going to have to find a way to score more. And if Nugent Hopkins kind of picks up where he left off a few years ago, I think they're going to be good. Defensively, they're going to be very good. I do think that Edmonton of the three has the best chance to make the playoffs. But that's not to say that Buffalo and Toronto don't have options. I think they do. I just don't think that it's going to happen that quickly. So that being said, I think we both agree on Edmonton, and I think that's a good thing. Now, I wanted to get to a topic that I haven't seen a lot of people talking about. Jack Mullett brought it up. If you're not familiar with Jack Mullett, go to YouTube, type in the Jack Mullett Hockey Show, great analyst, funny stuff, really adds perspective from a point of view of, it's almost like, you know, you see a guy who doesn't have any interest whether a team wins or loses. You know, he doesn't have any stock in it because he's just going to report what it is. And he really, really, really does a great job of just slightly analyzing it enough to let you know what he thinks, but he wants you to form your own opinion. He plays both sides of the puck there, and I always like a guy that plays both sides of the puck, and that sounds a little strange, but that's just the way it is. I like people that call it both ways, because many times in a lot of Penguin sites, and we've seen it before, they can't call this evenly. It's the Penguins are great. They're the best team in the league. There's no problems. And when they lose, it's okay. It's just a game. And we saw that all last season. And that's the one thing that we do differently. We call it both ways. If they suck, we're going to say they suck. If they're great, we're going to say they're great. But here's what I wanted to talk about. 3-on-3 overtime hockey. I have never, ever, and I want people to call in for this too. 323-642-1216. 3-on-3 is the stupidest thing I have ever seen in my life. I don't know how Gary Bettman can justify this. I don't know how the NHL owners voted on this. I don't know how the NHL players voted on this. Why don't we just go back to the old system? The old system worked great. You know what? Here's the deal. You go to 5-on-5 overtime, not 4-on-4, 5-on-5. If nobody wins, guess what? No double overtime. It's over with. The winner gets 2 points. The loser gets none. If you're still tied at the end of a five-minute overtime, you each split the 2 points 1-1. That's the way it should be. The NHL is, you know, it's like the crease gets bigger, the crease reduces in size. The goal pads get bigger, the goaltender's pads get smaller. They want all this scoring, but let's historically, we go back to the early 90s, majority of, and this is prior to the shootout, majority of games were ended in overtime, 5-on-5. How they go from 5-on-5 to 4-on-4 to 3-on-3, then to a shootout, that's a little ridiculous. 3-on-3, the players say they like, but have you watched 3-on-3 this preseason? It's ridiculous. It's one guy gets the puck, goes down and shoots. The other team comes back, gets down and shoots. Look, why don't you just go back to 5-on-5 overtime? Just go back to overtime, play hockey, split the damn points if it's still tied. I don't understand 3-on-3. It's stupid. Bettman seems to think, and I know what his argument is. His argument is, well, that'll be exciting for the fans. See Crosby, Kessel, and Malkin together. Yeah, that's exciting, but you're not going to resolve the game any quicker. You're going to make the game longer. Just go to 5-on-5 overtime and let it be what it is. The NHL has got to stop tinkering with the foundations of the game. And I'm sorry, but every time Bettman opens his mouth, his nose grows. That's just the way it is. And I'm going to get into this crap that he said on Sportsnet in a minute. But Dan, what is your take on 3-on-3? Do you think it's just another way for the NHL to be different? Or do you think it's an absolutely insane idea that has no basis for being in the league?
It's absurd. Okay, now you're going to sit there. I watched a couple of the overtime tests, if you will, during preseason. Actually, one of the games that Jeff and I watched together, this actually came up where the game was already won. But no, we need to test this. No, we don't. You know, what you're basically testing with 3-on-3 is how quickly you can get an odd shift, like 3-on-2 or 3-on-1, to get the puck in the net. That's all you're doing. And this whole nonsense of, well, it's going to start off with 3-on-3, but for a power play, 4-on-3. No fewer than 3 players allowed on the ice at the same time per team. Well, la-di-da. It might be exciting to some, but as Jeff pointed out, this just prolongs it. Just call me a traditionalist, I guess, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Jeff.
Also, if you take a penalty on 3-on-3, it's a penalty shot. Because you obviously can't play 3-on-2.
Adding another guy.
Well, but that's the point, is everything that I've seen in the preseason, and I could be very wrong, I have every penalty I've seen taken in 3-on-3 results in a penalty shot.
Yeah.
Is that the rule? I mean, I don't know if that's the rule. I'll have to look it up, but it's stupid. I don't understand. Now, moving on to more stupid things. Is Gary Bettman trying to deny that Quebec, okay, is the other team yet that is applied for a new franchise, but yet on Sportsnet opens his mouth and says, well, Quebecor says, hello, Quebecor is the other franchise. They're the other financial institution involved in this. Now, the one thing I wanted to talk about, did anybody watch that Kings preseason game in Las Vegas? Horrible. Granted, the fans were in on it. They liked it. They seemed to enjoy it. But the lighting was atrocious. I've never seen a game so unlit in my life. Now, I'm not saying that Vegas can't have an NHL franchise. What I'm saying is all the things the NHL has been so afraid of with gambling, it just, to me, I've said it and I'll say it again, I do not think past one season Las Vegas can support an NHL expansion team. Now, granted, it's a grassroots community outside of the Strip. You know, you have a lot of people from a lot of different parts in the world, and they can support a hockey team, but the team's going to be playing in a damn casino, an arena built right outside of a casino. And you bring it up all the time. Gaming hours, top gaming hours, 7 to 11, etc. And they're also going to give away a ton of tickets as comps. It's like, at what point does Gary Bettman sit there and say, gee, you know, maybe this isn't the brightest idea? Because you know what? He hasn't taken any shit for the Atlanta Thrashers disaster. And that was a disaster. Everybody said, this is not going to work. He did it anyway. But yet, he wants to hold his nads in his hand and protect his jock from Quebec and Mississauga, Ontario. Are you kidding me? Canada can support hockey. Americans can't. It's just a fact of life. Other than New York and the major metropolitan areas, you think Kansas City is going to support a hockey team? I don't. I think it'll be a fad. Now you can argue with me, well, St. Louis, Missouri, Kansas City. Yeah, Kansas City, Missouri too. That's great. That's fine. But it's like when they originally said in Slapshot, and then I'll turn it over to Dan. Oh, we're going to have hockey down in Florida. It was a big joke back at that time period that hockey could never survive in Florida because of the weather. But then the Reg Dunlop, I think it was Reg Dunlop, maybe it was Ned Braden or any of the other guys, made a key point. Yeah, but all the people that lived in the North are now retiring in the South, and they want hockey. So who would have thought that at some point Florida would have two hockey teams? One has been good at times, but miserable lately. The other's been good at times and miserable at times. But I guess the point I'm getting to is when you start talking about expansion, and we're going to talk about this for a few minutes, is you want to expand to an area that can support hockey. They talk this shit all the time of, we want to grow the sport. We want the sport to be seen. Okay, why don't we just put a goddamn sport or a goddamn team in Egypt? How will that work? Because putting an outdoor ice rink in L.A. is like putting a fucking team in Egypt. It's 85 degrees, and from the Winter Classic to the expansion, I just don't understand what the hell the NHL is doing. And I apologize for swearing and being all over the place, but I'm fed up with Bettman. Who else could have a job? Still keep it after this many... Oh, God.
Disasters.
Work stoppages. Hell, you have a strike in a union job, guess what happens? You get fired, and then you get taken out back, and you see Vinny and Tony, and they introduce baseball bats to your kneecaps. But this guy can do whatever he wants. And I understand he's trying to propel the league. I have no problem with that. In fact, I would have no problem with Vegas if I thought that it would be a success. Have we learned nothing yet? Daniel.
I am with Jeff with not having a problem with Vegas if it could be a success. Okay? 11 to 10, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. are basically your peak gaming hours. And to that point, the peak hours to catch a shows usually start out there around 7, 8 o'clock at night, and those run 2 or 3 hours. So by the time people get out of the show, the hockey game's over. So the tourists that come to Vegas to gamble, go see a show, they're not likely going to pick up tickets to go see a hockey game, even if they're comped. And the more comps you give away, guess what? That's less money revenue-wise. You know, in the lighting the other night, the lighting was god-awful. I mean, Jeff and I watched it together. We're looking at this and we're just saying, this part's way too dark. The middle of the ice looked pretty decent, but it's like the one end of the goal was totally blacked out from where the seating was because no one was going to sit there. And the lighting overall to cover the ice looked worse than trying to highlight the puck when Fox had hockey. Remember that, Jeff? When it's like, here's where the puck is. But anyway, I'm all for expansion if it's a sound premise to work. Quebec, that would work. But do you mean to sit there and tell me, folks, that Atlanta was going to work? No, not in the least. They support winners down south in Atlanta. When their teams lose, they don't show up. They speak with their wallets. And I guarantee you this, Vegas could implode in 2 years tops if things don't get off the ground running. I'll tell you that right now, because the Wranglers hardly had any sellouts up at all when the Las Vegas Wranglers were playing hockey. I believe in the ECHL, if I'm not mistaken. They hardly had sellouts up at all. So using that as a basis, I just don't see how Bettman saw the job. Three lockouts, disastrous moves when it comes to relocation, lying, literally double-talking on one network, and going on Sportsnet and saying a totally different thing. Come on. This usually doesn't happen with people that know how to do their jobs, even as commissioner. They try to resolve conflicts. They try to bring in franchises where they have a really good feeling that the base is already there, willing to support a team. And when it comes to work stoppages, they definitely don't have three in their tenure. They do their best to make sure that those are prevented between the owners and the players' unions. I'm at a loss for words, Jeff. You take the mic, please.
No, he's always erred on the side of the business owners, and that's the problem with commissioners of a league. They need to be partial. Okay, that's why the NHL Players Association has a guy like Donald Fair, because he says, oh, no, Gary. No, that's not going to happen. Let me tell you what's going to happen, Gary. And then they meet halfway. It's the same argument that I have for these goddamn Winter Classics. When they first came out with this idea, I went, holy crap, this is like going back to the heyday. This is how the game was played. Mm-hmm. Shinny hockey on lakes in Ontario. I played on lakes, you know, myself. I like that. Of course, it sucks when you hit a ripple in the ice because it's not straight. You go flying, or you fall in the lake like I did because the ice wasn't tough enough. But it's the same principle, and I've said this over and over again. First of all, you have an American banker / lawyer who is the commissioner of the league. He refuses to give Canada a Winter Classic game in Canada, forcing them to kind of do their Heritage Classic, which Calgary had to do a Heritage Classic. Now we've gone from Winter Classic, Heritage Classic to the Stadium Series. So why can't Montreal and Toronto have an outdoor game? Why can't Vancouver and Calgary have an outdoor game? Why can't L.A. go to Vancouver and play out an outdoor game? Why can't we take New York and have them go to Montreal and play an outdoor game? He's bastardized the game and tried to make it American. And I've said that for years, and I will continue to say that. He just doesn't get it. You know, I don't know what Canadians think, because I mean, I have a bunch of Canadian friends, but it's not like a subject that we talk about. But what Canadians think about Americans is we shoot people, we kill people, we have a gun control problem. It's all about money and this and this and this. But what they don't understand when it comes to hockey is that the majority of hockey fans come from the north. You're not going to see a guy from South Carolina, and there is one, John Roberts, how are you doing, that become hockey fans. But unless it's something you're born or something you grow up with, it's not something that you generally, at least not in my day and age, growing up, do. So from my perspective is, when it comes to Gary Bettman, and I'm going to defend Canada for a minute, if you're going to do expansion, I mean, and maybe it's just me, and Dan, you'll give me your thoughts here in a second. Here's a dummy question. If you are a guy that runs any league, okay, let's break this down in the simplest of terms. You have a bowling league. Okay. And what you want to do is you want to establish a whole bunch of teams in your league. And let's say that for 40 miles, there's 10 or 20 bowling alleys in those mileage. You're going to put a team in every bowling alley there because you're going to subsidize and make more money. Now, let's say 100 miles from there or 300 miles surrounding that area, you have no bowling alleys. So you're just going to go ahead and build one and put a team in there and hope they can survive and compete. And that's essentially what this is. You know, he's gonna go out to Vegas, and it may work, it may not. But why don't you go into Canada where you know, A, the sport was invented there, and it depends who you ask, because the British are claiming they invented it, which we can argue that all day. Canadians are going to roll their eyes, but there is significant historical facts that suggest that maybe it was the other way around and that a Brit invented it and took it back and took it too. I don't know. I don't care. That's not the point. To me, it's a Canadian game. But why would you not invest in a Canadian team? Mississauga could handle a team. I mean, first of all, you've got the OHL. All right. You've got the Quebec Major Junior. You've got the Maritimes. You got the WHL. You've got all of these, Canadian farm teams, and you've got juniors. How in the world could they not support a team? Quebec's new building, phenomenal. Everybody, Letang loved it. P.K. Subban said it was a great arena. This arena is ready to roll. So there could be a question as far as from a Montreal territory standpoint, does the Montreal Canadiens owners want another team in Quebec? And I can understand their frustration if they don't. But why would you go to Vegas when you have a sure thing in Mississauga and in Quebec? It doesn't make any sense. Now, granted, Montreal and Mississauga are not Western Canada. It's in the East. But from my perspective and my 2 points, I would go back to Canada. Go where the well isn't dry. Go where you know you can still drill. Don't go to Vegas and try to sell everybody a wishing well when there's nothing but sand. And that's my point. I don't think Vegas is a huge risk, but it's risky enough. Now, if they took something like Arizona and moved them, that I don't have a problem with. Because once you start getting into, well, a team that is an expansion team has to be better than the team that was last expanded. So every team is going to lose 3 or 4 players. So at the end of the day, my point is, and I'm sorry I ran my mouth here, go to Canada. Go where the fans can support the damn game. I can appreciate a team being in America. I have no problem with that. But I think if you're going to go to America, I think there's a couple of other places you could probably feasibly go. Maine.
Yeah.
Good example. Maine. New Hampshire. Anywhere up north.
Seattle
even, I think, would be an alternative to Las Vegas. You know, you could essentially add another team in Michigan, although I don't think economically they could support it. Tennessee, for God's sakes. You got Nashville. Maybe you put a team in Memphis. You know, the Memphis Marauders or something like that. You know, be smart. If Nashville's being supported, you know Memphis can be supported. Just think smarter about where you're going to put some teams. Dan, we got 12 minutes left. Give us some thoughts on what do you think about expansion? What may be some of your ideas, and et cetera?
If I had a choice to expand, won't it be Quebec? Bring back the Nordiques, first and foremost. But if you're looking for out west, Seattle was mentioned by Jeff, and I support that for a reason. You're only about 3.5, maybe 4 miles away from Vancouver. So you have another rivalry there that you can build on when it comes to having a support base there. And you can have people that will be willing to drive from Vancouver or in between Vancouver and Seattle and go see games in Seattle. And you have people that are willing to go from Seattle, from the inland there, up to Vancouver to catch a game. I also would support another team out east, if at all possible. I mean, the expansion is a very tricky thing. And most of all, and I will stand with Jeff on this as well, if you need, for the love of hockey, the roots of the sport, of where it took off, is Canada. Where would be the problem of switching up where the Winter Classic is going to be this coming January? Right now, it's Montreal at Boston. But what's wrong with flipping it around and putting it in Montreal? That would sell out as quickly as it would in Boston. And the weather is nicer. You won't have to worry about, you know, let's say that, oh no, Boston's had a warm spell for some unforgotten reason. Usually doesn't happen, but let's say it does. And then you have to worry about ice modulation temperatures and stuff like that. You probably wouldn't have to worry about that in Montreal. That, and you're sending the game back to its roots. Okay? And as far as Quebec goes, when you have guys who are professionals that play this game night in, night out, and they are singing the praises of a new arena, saying, hey, this is a great arena, it'd be great for hockey. Common sense and logic would say, maybe we should postpone Vegas or find somewhere out west that would be a little more palatable, and let's put a team in this new arena in Quebec and bring back the Nordiques. Because I guarantee you, if you think logistically, with logistics, and not just, oh, where can I send the nearest prophet, and come out there and build a base that way, I guarantee you, hockey will reach a better pantheon at the end of the day, as opposed to putting it somewhere in the desert where maybe you'll get 6,000 to 10,000 people a night, but not a sellout. Living proof is Arizona. When is the last time Arizona was sold out consistently in the Phoenix area, and they've had it, the team there for quite some time now? It hasn't really panned out. But I guarantee you, if you put it in Seattle, you put it in Quebec, or you put it out in Maine, it's going to sell like hotcakes. Because if you put a team in Maine, for example, people will drive down to Boston or up to Maine to catch a game. They will, because people in New England, they support hockey with a vengeance. If you put a team, say, a second team in the Toronto area, like in Hamilton, for example, people will support that as much as they would a second team in Quebec, either in Quebec City or around the Montreal area. There are plenty of sites for the NHL to look at. I just don't get why we're stuck on Viva Las Vegas. I just don't get it, guys. Here's Jeff.
I think one of the things that is going to push Vegas is corporate money.
Yeah.
They know they have the corporate money. And at the end of the day, I don't buy it. I mean, a lot of people said they didn't buy it when the Los Angeles Kings went to Los Angeles. You know, oh, what are they going to do, play hockey on the beach? You know, that was the big thing then. But I think, you know, Vegas could be a viable idea. I just don't understand why that's the focal point. I think Seattle, especially being close to, you know, obviously Tacoma, and Tacoma had the Western Hockey League, Tacoma SaberCats. I had a friend, Jason DeLorme, who played there. It's a good area for hockey, and it's close to Vancouver. So it's, you know, if they want to talk about, like they always say that the West has such a crappy travel schedule. Okay, well then fix it. Fix it a little bit. You know, try to fix it to the best of your abilities and to your advantages. But at the end of the day, I think the point is that Gary Bettman supposedly has a 10-pronged process for this kind of stuff, and I just don't buy that it is. I think at the end of the day, it just comes down to whoever's got the most money, whoever can sell tickets, and it goes from there. But adding a team in Vegas, I just have a really hard time buying that. I just, you know, I don't know if it's good for the NHL, but then again, you know, I also thought adding a second team in Florida and the Panthers was a bad idea as well. Got a couple things going on around the NHL. For anybody that's a former Brandon Sutter fan of the Penguins, he is no longer playing center. He's been shifted over to that left wing side, which is a little interesting. Everybody thought that Zdeno Chara from the Bruins would be good to go. Apparently he isn't. So he will not be playing tonight against the Winnipeg Jets. It also looks like Alex Galchenyuk's move to center is really going to pay dividends for the Canadiens, so that's pretty good. The Buffalo Sabres captain, Brian Gionta, is not going to play against the Senators. So there's a lot of stuff going on around the NHL. I think it was interesting last night that the Blackhawks got beat. I think that that's I don't think it was surprising, not for me, because I think that and we have just a couple minutes, and I don't want to get into a whole big thing about it, but let's look at some scores really quick. Montreal 3, Toronto 1, Rangers 3, Chicago 2, Vancouver 5, Calgary 1, San Jose 5, Los Angeles 1. None of those scores really surprised me. I didn't think that Chicago is – I still don't think Chicago is going to be that good this season. I really don't. I'm not going to go to the Kane situation, but I just don't think they're going to be as good. San Jose winning is not a surprise to me. Dan and I both have picked them to essentially win the Stanley Cup this year. Dan's got them in 7. I've got them in 6. Vancouver and Calgary, man, what a nasty series that's going to be. A couple of fight right off the faceoff last night. So as far as that all goes, I think realistically there's going to be a couple of things this season that are going to really stick out. I think if I had to say 3 things in closing before I let you do your closing remarks, is I think Columbus is going to be tough this year. I think Winnipeg is going to be beyond tough. But my sleeper team, the team that I don't think anybody expects to do a whole lot that's going to be really good, is Calgary. Dan?
Mm-hmm. Good call there. My sleeper is in the West, and it would be Edmonton. For some reason, I'm not going to sleep on them, nor am I going to sleep on Jeffrey's pick of Calgary to that point. And out East, my sleeper is Columbus. Keep a lookout. Those guys are up and coming. And no, this has nothing to do with the acquisition of Saad. It has to deal with the fact that they've put in piece by piece by piece. They're my sleeper. Jeff, final thought?
Yeah, here's my final thoughts. The NHL always releases the final rosters for opening day, okay? And here we go with the Penguins opening roster. There should not be any surprises here. I've only got a couple of minutes. So here we go. Bo Bennett, Nick Bonino, Adam Clendening, Ian Cole, Sidney Crosby, Matt Cullen, Brian Dumoulin, Tim Erickson, Bobby Farnham, Marc-Andre Fleury, Patrick Hornquist, Phil Kessel, Chris Kunitz, Chris Letang, Ben Lovejoy, Evgeny Malkin, David Perron, Sergei Plotkinov, Rob Scuderi, Daniel Sprong, Oscar Sundquist, who has been actually sent down. Porter's been brought back up along with, I forget it, it's a brain fart at this very minute, and Jeff Zatkoff. Injured list are Eric Fair, Tom Kuhn-Hackel, and Pascal Dupuis. Tonight's a good game, 8:30 tonight against Dallas. Sorry we're rushing here at the very end. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we're going to do more shows like this. And check us out on www.pensblogpost.com. You can hit us up on Facebook under the group settings of Pens Blog Post. It's going to be a tough game, and I think we're going to go right back to the basics of hockey tonight. In order to beat Dallas, who's one of the quickest teams in this league, play them post-to-post, net-to-net, board-to-board. Make them pay. If you don't make them pay early on, then they're going to get comfortable. And a comfortable Dallas team is a scary Dallas team. Dan, final thoughts?
I second what my partner in crime just said. A comfortable team, whether it be Dallas or whoever, could really be dangerous. So just get back to basics tonight, and everything's going to be good to go. Have a great one. And we are hosting Game Chat tonight at 8:15 on our Facebook page. So join us on Facebook.
Yep, join us over on Facebook. On our Facebook page, go to group and type in Penn's Vlog Post, or you can hit up Jeff Lohman or Dan Evans, Daniel Evans on Facebook. Go to pensvlogpost.com or hit us up wherever you can. You could send us an email. Mine is jlohman7@yahoo.com, and Dan's is aps2334@hotmail.com. Over on our Penslog site, we have a lot of articles. We have a lot of articles, interactive stuff, videos, analysis, you name it, we've got it. So check us out on penslogpost.com. Have a great day, everybody, and hopefully at some point we can start doing these radio shows after the games. So let us know. Go on to our page and let us know what you think. Either way, thanks for tuning in, and have a great day, and go Penguins.
I hope.